Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 681, titled Specialized Knowledge and Abilities, Part 2. This program has been recorded on July 26th of the year 2009. Before launching into the main body of the broadcast, please use the website spitfirelist.com. Tons of information, audio and print, a mini library of old anti-fascist books. Everything I've done, my entire life's work, is on that website and available for download for free. The only investment you need make is one of time. It's the best source for information of this kind on Earth, sadly. And if you want to support the work that I'm doing, there's a page to click on to do so. There's no better way of fighting what's happening than to support the work I'm doing. Now, the main body of the broadcast. This is a sequel to For the Record 27 called Specialized Knowledge and Abilities. What this refers to is a tactic that neo-Nazis and neo-fascists around the world have been pursuing, namely deliberate infiltration of military and law enforcement organizations, as well as the judicial establishments of various countries, in order to acquire specialized knowledge and abilities for the specific purpose of instituting fascism and overthrowing the existing social order. The first broadcast, again, was For the Record 27, recorded in early 1996, and the title, the quote, specialized knowledge and abilities, comes from a German Nazi lawyer named Jürgen Rieger. Jürgen Rieger was the fellow who coined the term specialized knowledge and abilities when he was discussing what was needed for the new generation of Nazis and fascists to acquire power. Namely, they have to learn how to kill people and overthrow states in order to do so. And the way to do that was to acquire police and military capabilities in order to gain those, quote, specialized knowledge and abilities. Please do not understand anything that I say in this broadcast to in any size, shape, form, or manner impugn people in the military or law enforcement. No, this, on the contrary, is alluding to the tactic of infiltration for the purpose of subversion. So please do not misunderstand what I'm saying to be in any size, shape, form, or manner an indictment of military or police personnel or establishments. Interestingly enough, Jürgen Rieger was an attendee at the Holocaust Denial Conference of President Ahmadinejad of Iran, this in December of 2006. Ahmadinejad has been networking with American and European neo-fascists, including Klan leader David Duke, or former Klan leader David Duke. I would also note that the aforementioned Jürgen Rieger, who coined the term specialized knowledge and abilities, is a fellow who had basically, has just recently been appointed one of the vice presidents of the NPD, the National Democratic Party, the top German neo-Nazi party, closely associated, by the way, with the American National Alliance. There was a story in Deutsche Welle, the German news service, from May 25, 2008. Far-right NPD appoints Holocaust denier as vice president. And it reads in part as follows. Germany's main far-right group, the National Democratic Party, or NPD, embraced a leading extremist Sunday, May 25th, but avoided explicit expressions of neo-Nazi opinion, which were prohibited under German law. Jürgen Rieger, a lawyer who was advised and defended neo-Nazis, was appointed one of the group's three vice presidents. Rieger has convictions for Holocaust denial and assault. Reporters suggested that the overtly neo-Nazi faction within the NPD was gaining a greater voice in the Anti-Foreigner Party, which has seats in two of Germany's 16 state assemblies but has never won parliamentary representation at federal level. A party spokesman later welcomed Rieger's appointment, saying he would energize the NPD. So Jürgen Rieger is moving up in life. And again, this program is a sequel to For the Record 27. Now, what I'm about to read should be viewed against the background of the Nazi novel Serpent's Walk. In that novel, again, as I've said so many times, that book, like a companion volume, The Turner Diaries, also published by National Vanguard Books, the publishing arm of the Nazi National Alliance, the American Nazi group National Alliance. This book, I believe, is far more than just a novel it purports to be. I think it is actually a manifesto, a blueprint of things to come. In Serpent's Walk, the Third Reich and the SS go underground, build up their economic power, buy into the opinion-forming media, and following a series of terrorist attacks on the United States involving weapons of mass destruction, which destroy much of the country, result in an invocation of martial law, the descendants of the SS, the Underground Reich, have infiltrated the military and they take over the country, and America becomes the epicenter of a worldwide Fourth Reich. There are indications that Nazi elements are attempting to do just such a thing. A very interesting article appeared in Salon.com. This is from June 15th of 2009. This is an article by Matt Kennard. It's titled, "Neo-Nazis Are in the Army Now. Why the U.S. Military is Ignoring Its Own Regulations and Permitting White Supremacists to Join Its Ranks." On a muggy Florida evening in 2008, I meet Iraq War veteran Forrest Fogarty in the Wing House, a little bar-restaurant on the outskirts of Tampa, his favorite hangout. He told me on the phone I would recognize him by his skinhead. Sure enough, when I spot a white guy at a table by the door with a shaved head, white tank top, and bulging muscles, I know it can only be him. Over a plate of chicken wings, he tells me about his path into the white power movement. Quote, "I was 14 when I decided I wanted to be a Nazi," he says. At his first high school near Los Angeles, he was bullied by black and Latino kids. That's when he first heard Screwdriver, a band he calls the godfather of the white power movement. "I became obsessed," he says. He had an image from one of Screwdriver's album covers, a Viking carrying a staff, an icon among white nationalists, tattooed on his left forearm. Soon after, he had another white power symbol, a Celtic cross, emblazoned on his stomach. At 15, Fogarty moved with his dad to Tampa, where he started picking fights with groups of black kids at his new high school. "On the first day, this bunch of niggers thought I was a racist, so they asked, 'Are you in the KKK?' he tells me. I said, 'Yeah,' and it was on." Soon enough, he was expelled. For the next 6 years, Fogarty flitted from landscaping job to construction job, neither of which he'd ever wanted to do. "I was just drinking and fighting," he says. He started his own Nazi rock group, Attack, and made friends in the National Alliance, at the time the biggest neo-Nazi group in the country. It has called for a, quote, "long-term eugenics program involving at least the entire populations of Europe and America," unquote. But the military ran in Fogarty's family. His grandfather had served during World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, and his dad had been a Marine in Vietnam. At 22, Fogarty resolved to follow in their footsteps. "I wanted to serve my country," he says. Army regulations prohibit soldiers from participating in racist groups, and recruiters are instructed to keep an eye out for suspicious tattoos. Before signing on the dotted line, enlistees are required to explain any tattoos. At a Tampa recruitment office, though, Fogarty sailed right through the sign-up process. Quote, "They just told me to write an explanation of each tattoo, and I made up some stuff, and that was that," he says. Soon, he was posted to Fort Stewart in Georgia, where he became part of the 3rd Infantry Division. Fogarty's ex-girlfriend, intent on destroying his new military career, sent a dossier of photographs to Fort Stewart. The photos showed Fogarty attending white supremacist rallies and performing with his band, Attack. "They hauled me before some sort of committee and showed me the pictures," Fogarty says. "I just denied them and said my girlfriend was a spiteful bitch," he adds. "They knew what I was about, but they let it go because I'm a great soldier," unquote. In 2003, Fogarty was sent to Iraq. For 2 years, he served in the military police, escorting officers, including generals, around the hostile country. He says he was granted top-secret clearance and access to battle plans. Fogarty speaks with regret that he, quote, "never had any kill counts," unquote. But he says his time in Iraq increased his racist resolve. Quote, "I hate Arabs more than anybody for the simple fact I've served over there and seen how they live," unquote, he tells me. "They're just a backward people. Them and the Jews are just disgusting people as far as I'm concerned. Their customs, everything to do with the Middle East is just repugnant to me," unquote. Because of his tattoos and his racist comments, most of his buddies and his commanding officers were aware of his Nazism. "They all knew in my unit," he says. They would always kid around and say, "Hey, you're that skinhead," unquote. But no one sounded an alarm to higher-ups. "I would volunteer for all the hardest missions, and they were like, 'Let Fogarty go.' They didn't want to get rid of me," unquote. Fogarty left the Army in 2005 with an honorable discharge. He says he was asked to re-enlist. He declined. He was sick of the system. Since the launch of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the U.S. military has struggled to recruit and re-enlist troops. As the conflicts have dragged on, the military has loosened regulations, issuing moral waivers, unquote, in many cases, allowing even those with criminal records to join up. Veterans suffering post-traumatic stress disorder have been ordered back to the Middle East for second and third tours of duty. The lax regulations have also opened the military's doors to neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and gang members with drastic consequences. Some neo-Nazis have been charged with crimes inside the military, and others have been linked to recruitment efforts for the white right. A recent Department of Homeland Security report, Right-Wing Extremism, Current Economic and Political Climate Fueling Resurgence in Radicalization and Recruitment, stated, quote, "The willingness of a small percentage of military personnel to join extremist groups during the 1990s because they were disgruntled, disillusioned, or suffering from the psychological effects of war is being replicated today," unquote. Many white supremacists join the army to secure training for, as they see it, a future domestic race war. Others claim to be shooting Iraqis not to pursue the military's strategic goals, but because killing Hajis, unquote, is their duty as white militants. By the way, Haji is a racist slang term for an Arab. Continuing here, soldiers' associations with extremist groups and their racist actions contravene a host of military statutes instituted in the past three decades. But during the War on Terror, unquote, U.S. armed forces have turned a blind eye on their own regulations. A 2005 Department of Defense report states, quote, "Effectively, the military has a don't ask, don't tell policy pertaining to extremism. If individuals can perform satisfactorily without making their extremist opinions overt, they are likely to be able to complete their contracts," unquote. Carter F. Smith is a former military investigator who worked with the U.S. Army Criminal Investigation Command from 2004 to 2006 when he helped to root out gang violence in troops. Quote, "When you need more soldiers, you lower the standards whether you say so or not," he says. "The increase in gangs and extremists is an indicator of this." Military investigators may be concerned about white supremacists, he says, again quoting, "but they have a war to fight and they don't have incentive to slow down," unquote. Tom Metzger is the former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan and current leader of the White Aryan Resistance. He tells me the military has never been more tolerant of racial extremists. Quote, "Now they're letting everybody in," he says. The presence of white supremacists in the military first triggered concern in 1976. At Camp Pendleton in California, a group of black Marines attacked white Marines they mistakenly believed to be in the KKK. The resulting investigation uncovered a KKK chapter at the base and led to the jailing or transfer of 16 Klansmen. Reports of Klan activity among soldiers and Marines surfaced again in the 1980s, spurring President Reagan's Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger to condemn military participation in white supremacist organizations. Then, in 1995, a black couple was murdered by two neo-Nazi paratroopers around Fort Bragg in North Carolina. The murder investigation turned up evidence that 22 soldiers at Fort Bragg were known to be extremists. That year, language was added to a Department of Defense directive explicitly prohibiting participation in organizations that, quote, espouse supremacist causes, unquote, or again, quoting, advocate the use of force or violence. By the way, that those killings in 1995 were discussed in For the Record 27, Specialized Knowledge and Abilities Part 1, and it's worth noting that the killers, members of the 82nd Airborne Division, performed the killings in order to basically celebrate or to commemorate the death of Robert Matthews, a member of the Order, a neo-Nazi organization that murdered Alan Berg. As we've looked at in the past, and specifically from the book Unholy Alliance by Peter Lavenda, the Order actually received some funding by, quote, German families, unquote, in Latin America. Guess who that might have been, okay? Continuing with the Salon.com article from 6/15/2009, "Today, a complete ban on membership in racist organizations appears to have been lifted, though the proliferation of white supremacists in the military is difficult to gauge. The military does not track them as a discrete category, coupling them with gang members. But one indication of the scope comes from the FBI. Following an investigation of white supremacist groups, a 2008 FBI report declared, quote, military experience, ranging from failure at basic training to success in special operations forces, is found throughout the white supremacist extremist movement, unquote. In white supremacist incidents from 2001 to 2008, the FBI identified 203 veterans. Most of them were associated with the National Alliance and the National Socialist Movement, which promote anti-Semitism and the overthrow of the U.S. government, as well as assorted skinhead groups. Because the FBI focused only on reported cases, its numbers don't include the many extremist soldiers who have managed to stay off the radar. but its report does pinpoint why the white supremacist movement seek to recruit veterans. They, quote, may exploit their access to restricted areas and intelligence, or apply specialized training in weapons, tactics, and organizational skills to benefit the extremist movement, unquote. Translation, specialized knowledge and abilities. Continuing, in fact, since the movement's inception, its leaders have encouraged members to enlist in the U.S. military as a way to receive state-of-the-art combat training, courtesy of the U.S. taxpayer, in preparation for a domestic race war. The concept of a race war is central to extremist groups whose adherents imagine an eruption of violence that pits races against each other and the government. That goal comes up often in the chatter on white supremacist websites. On the neo-Nazi website Blood and Honor, a user called 88Soldier88 wrote in 2008 that he is an active-duty soldier working in a detainee holding area in Iraq. He complained about, quote, how nice, unquote, we have to treat these effing people. Better than our own troops, unquote. Then he added, again quoting, hopefully the training will prepare me for what I hope is to come, unquote. Another poster, American Aryan 88Soldier88, wrote, quote, I have the training I need and will pass it on to others when I get out, unquote. By the way, the 88 is a reference to the letter H. In the immediate aftermath of World War II, saying Heil Hitler, the Nazi salute was illegal in Germany, and so they would simply say 88, which is the eighth letter of the alphabet, H, repeated twice. It's an abbreviation for Heil Hitler, but that's what that 88 refers to there in both of those online posters, online names. On NewSaxon.org, a social networking group for neo-Nazis, a group called White Military Men hosts numerous contributors. It was begun by Fighting for Whites, unquote, who identified himself at one point as Lance Corporal Burton of the 2nd Battalion Fox Company, but then removed the information. The group calls for all men with military experience, retired or active reserve, to, quote, join this group to see how many men have experience to build an army. We want to win a war. We need soldiers, unquote. Fighting for Whites, whose tagline is White Supremacy Will Prevail, U.S. Military Leading the Way, goes on to write, I am with an infantry battalion in the Marine Corps. I have had the pleasure of killing four enemies that tried to kill me. I have the best training to kill people, unquote. On his wall, a friend wrote, thanks, brother. Kill a couple of towelheads for me, okay? Such attitudes come straight from the movement's leaders. We do encourage them to sign up for the military, says Charles Wilson, a spokesman for the National Socialist Movement. We can use the training to secure the resistance to our government. Billy Roper of White Revolution says skinheads join the military for the usual reasons, such as access to higher education, but also, quote, to secure the future for white children, unquote. Again quoting, America began the bloody revolution, he reminds me, and it might end that way, unquote. When it comes to screening out racists at recruitment centers, military regulations appear to have collapsed. We don't exclude people from the Army based on their thoughts, says S. Douglas Smith, an Army public affairs officer. We exclude based on behavior. He says an offensive or extremist tattoo, quote, might be a reason for them not to be in the military, unquote, or it might not. Again, quoting, we try to educate recruiters on extremist tattoos, he said, but again, quoting, the tattoo is a relatively subjective decision and shouldn't in itself bar enlistment. What about something as obvious as a swastika? Quote, a swastika would trigger questions, Smith says. Again, quoting, but again, if the gentleman said, I like the way the swastika looked and he had a clean criminal record, it's possible we would allow that person in, unquote. There are First Amendment rights, he added. In the spring, I telephoned at 5 Army recruitment centers across the country at random. I said I was interested in joining up and mentioned that I had a pair of SS bolts tattooed on my arm. A 2000 military brochure stated that SS bolts were a tattoo image that should raise suspicions. But none of the recruiters reacted negatively, and when pressed directly about the tattoo, not one said it would be an outright problem. A recruiter in Houston was typical. He said he'd never heard of SS bolts and just encouraged me to come on in. It's in the interest of recruiters to interpret recruiting standards loosely. If they fail to meet targets based on the number of soldiers they enlist, they may have to attend a punitive counseling session, and it could hurt any chance for promotion. When in 2005 the Army relaxed regulations on non-extremist tattoos, such as body art covering the hands, neck, and face, this cut recruiters even more slack. Even the education of recruiters about how to identify extremists seems to have fallen by the wayside. The 2005 Department of Defense report concluded that recruiting personnel, quote, were not aware of having received systematic training on recognizing and responding to possible terrorists, unquote, a designation that includes white supremacists, again quoting, who try to enlist, unquote. Participation on white supremacist websites would be an easy way to screen out extremist recruits, but the report found that the military had not clarified which web forums were gathering places for extremists. Once white supremacists are in the military, it's easy to stay there. An Army Command Policy Manual devotes more than 100 pages to rooting them out, but no officer appears to be reading it. Hunter Glass was a paratrooper in the 1980s and became a gang cop in 1999 in Fayetteville, North Carolina, near Fort Bragg. In the early 1990s, the military was hard on them. They could pick and choose, unquote, he says. They were looking for swastikas. They were looking for anything, unquote. But the regulations on racist extremists got jettisoned with the war on terror. Glass says white supremacists now enjoy an open culture of impunity in the armed forces, quote, we're seeing guys with tattoos all the time, he says. As far as hunting them down, I don't see it. I'm seeing the opposite. Where, if a white supremacist has committed a crime, the military stance will be, he didn't commit a race-related crime. In fact, a 2006 report by the Army's Criminal Investigation Command shows that military brass consistently ignored evidence of extremism. One case at Fort Hood reveals that a soldier was making internet postings on the white supremacist site stormfront.org. But the investigator was unable to locate the soldier in question. In a brief summary of the case, an investigator writes that due to poor documentation, unquote, again quoting, attempts to locate with minimal information met with negative results, unquote. I'm not doing my job here, unquote, the investigator notes, again quoting, needs to get fixed, unquote. In another case, investigators found that a Fort Hood soldier belonged to the neo-Nazi group Hammerskins and was, quote, closely associated with the Celtic Knights of Austin, Texas, another extremist organization, a situation bad enough to merit an investigation by the FBI and the Army's Criminal Investigation Command. The Army summary states that there was, quote, probable cause, unquote, to believe the soldier had participated in at least one white extremist meeting and had, quote, provided a military technical manual to the leader of a white extremist group in order to assist in the planning and execution of future attacks on various targets, unquote. One of four preliminary probes into white supremacists, the Criminal Investigation Command, carried on through only this one. The probe revealed that, quote, a larger single attack was planned for the San Antonio, Texas area after a considerable amount of media attention was given to illegal immigrants. The attack was not completed due to the inability of the organization to obtain explosives, unquote. Despite these threats, the subject was interviewed only once in 2006 and the investigation was terminated the following year. White supremacists may be doing more than avoiding expulsion. They may be using their military status to help build the white right. The FBI found that two Army privates in the 82nd Airborne Division at Fort Bragg had attempted in 2007 to sell stolen property from the military, including ballistic vests, a combat helmet, and pain medication such as morphine, to an undercover FBI agent they believed was involved with the white supremacist movement. They were convicted and sentenced to 6 years. It found multiple examples of white supremacist recruitment among active military, including a period in 2003 when six active duty soldiers at Fort Riley, members of the Aryan Nation, were recruiting their Army colleagues and even serving as the Aryan Nation's point of contact for the state of Kansas. One white supremacist soldier, James Douglas Ross, a military intelligence officer stationed at Fort Bragg, was given a bad conduct discharge from the Army when he was caught trying to mail a submachine gun from Iraq to his father's home in Spokane, Washington. Military police found a cache of white supremacist paraphernalia and several weapons hidden behind ceiling tiles in Ross's military quarters. After his discharge, a Spokane County deputy sheriff saw Ross passing out flyers for the neo-Nazi National Alliance. Rooting out extremists is difficult because racism pervades the military, according to many soldiers. They say troops throughout the Middle East use derogatory terms like Haji or sand nigger to define Arab insurgents and often the Arab population itself. Racism was rampant, recalls vet Michael Preisner, who served in Iraq in 2003 and 2004 as part of the 173rd Airborne Brigade. All of command everywhere, it was completely ingrained in the consciousness of every soldier. I've heard top generals refer to the Iraqi people as Hajis, unquote. The anti-Arab racism came from the brass. It came from the top. And everything was justified because they just weren't considered people, unquote. Another vet, Michael Toten, who served in Iraq with the 101st Airborne in 2003 and 4, says, quote, "It wouldn't stand out if you said sand niggers, even if you aren't a neo-Nazi," unquote. Toten says his perspective has changed in the intervening years, but, quote, "At that time, I used the word sand nigger, and I didn't consider a Haji to be derogatory," unquote. Skipping down. The U.S. Senate Committee on the Armed Forces has long been considered one of Congress's most powerful groups. It governs legislation affecting the Pentagon defense budget, military strategies, and operations. Today, it's led by the influential Senators Carl Levin and John McCain. An investigation by the committee into how white supremacists permeate the military in plain violation of the U.S. law could result in substantive changes. I contacted the committee, but staffers would not agree to be interviewed. Instead, a spokesperson responded that white supremacy in the military has never arisen as a concern. In an email, the spokesperson said, quote, "The committee doesn't have any information that would indicate this is a particular problem," unquote. And again, I've been reading from an article by Matt Kennard from Salon.com from June 15th of 2009. Again, this program is a follow-up to, for the record, program number 27. One of the things to keep in mind with regard to this infiltration is the possibility that individuals with a particularly high degree of specialized knowledge and abilities could actually perpetrate things that might then subsequently be blamed on someone else. The possibility of elements that have successfully infiltrated the military, or perhaps successfully infiltrated the military, then been discharged and continued to network with like-minded elements inside the military, the possibility for them perpetrating a massive terrorist incident, which then could be blamed on someone else, is not something to be overlooked. And indeed, in a country with as sensitive an infrastructure as this country has, with nuclear power plants, with a power grid that's subject to all kinds of attacks, the possibility that individuals either in the military or with a prior military experience, and again, a high degree of specialized knowledge and abilities could pull off just such an attack is not a possibility to be too readily dismissed. And again, the possibility of them becoming an element of a Nazi and underground Reich Fifth Column is indeed what is presented in the book Serpent's Walk. So Serpent's Walk, like the Turner Diaries, published by the National Alliance, and you heard that group described many times in this particular article. And again, I want to make it emphatically clear that in no size, shape, form, or manner am I impugning the military or law enforcement establishments as a whole, nor any individuals in it. On the contrary, if we are to be kept safe, it's imperative that they receive support. I also, this illustrates one reason why I have long been in favor of selective service. I never agreed with the idea of getting rid of the draft. There are a variety of reasons why I feel that way. This article here indicating that lowering recruiting standards to meet the demands of a badly overstretched military, well, this is just one of the reasons why I favor universal conscription. Once again, please use the SpitfireList.com website. I work very hard on that. I put all of my life's work up there for download for free. The only investment you have to make is one of time. It is, sadly, the best source for research of that kind of information available on Earth. Please use it. And again, there's a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. And if you want to resist the current trends, if you want to do something to fight fascism, no better way of doing it than supporting the work I'm doing. This concludes For the Record program number 681, Specialized Knowledge and Abilities Part 2. This is being recorded on July 26th of 2009. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.